You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
So, Robin.
Yes?
Do you think you're in love with me?
Oh, no.
No, I don't think. I know.
I know I'm in love with you as well, and at some point we could tell the story of our first date where I think I fell in love with you before you fell in love with me, but I was definitely a love at first sight person. But we were friends for a while. We were friends for over a year or about a year. And I think a lot of people often are in the friend zone with people they are in love with or potentially in love with. And while we're talking about romantic relationships, some of the ideas that I'm going to talk about here and that Robin and I are going to talk about here also apply to business relationships, employer-employee relationships. It's not just, intimacy is not just about romance. Intimacy is how you work with people. It's about your friendships. It's about your relationships within the community. Now, of course, you're not romantically intimate with your boss. At least I hope not. I mean, that does happen if you fall in love with your boss. Jay, try not to fall in love with me, but that's not what we're talking about here, although I'll refer to it a little. So there was, and in a separate podcast, Robin and I are going to talk about what your IQ is. And I don't mean your intelligence quotient, but the intimacy quotient of your relationship. So that's in a future podcast. But this one is specifically a technique to move from the friend zone, or let's say the, you know, employee zone to the, well, let's just stick with the friend zone for a second. The friend zone to the romance zone. And
I got to ask, is it possible? I feel like I've tried a million times. It's never possible.
Well, let's see how you think after this technique. So, okay. And this is not like some pickup scene. Like I'm assuming already that you're not really in a bar or a party and you're meeting someone for the first time. I'm assuming, you know somebody, you're on a date and you're trying to figure out how to kind of make, on a date, everybody is taking in a ton of information. Like, you're like, where is he or she taking me? What does he or she look like? What does he or she smell like? What does he or she, you know, kind of the external things. What do they do for a living? What's interesting about them in their resume? But then there's the more kind of like how you interact, how you make someone laugh, and that sort of thing. So this is just kind of one aspect of it. But so I was looking at a lot of different research on this, and there was a paper with a ton of experiments. If you want to read the original paper, which is hard to read because it's academia, the paper is called "The Experimental Generation of Interpersonal Closeness: A Procedure and Some Preliminary Findings." And it's by the main author is Arthur Aaron from SUNY Stony Brook, but there's also professors from UC Santa Cruz, Arizona State University. There's a bunch of professors who did this research and combined their findings. The main conclusion is that one, and I'm quoting them, one key pattern associated with development of a close relationship is sustained, escalating, reciprocal, personalistic self-disclosure. So there's a lot of words there. So again, I'm gonna break this down. So they look at not only romantic relationships, but again, friendships. Let's say you just started a job and you want your boss to notice you more, or let's say you're pitching investors or doing sales. So that's what they mean by close relationship is you go from stranger, being a relative stranger, to being closer. And
all right. So it doesn't mean it's a lover.
Right. But I'm going to talk about it in the context of
romance,
because I think that's the most common. I mean, it's not the most common, actually, and it's not even maybe the most important. But I mean, I think people who are in love with each other do what I'm about to suggest automatically. But so that's why they said close relationship among peers. But the key pattern is sustained, meaning it continues over time. Mm-hmm. Escalating means it increases. Reciprocal means it goes both ways. Personalistic means it's about yourself. Self-disclosure, meaning revealing things about yourself. And so escalating means you don't start off with, like, it's not like you're on the first minute of your first date and you say, let me tell you about the time I tried to kill myself. Like, that would be, you know, that wouldn't be escalating. That would be, you know, jumping off the roof. You've escalated too much. Reciprocal means both sides are revealing. And of course, it's got to be, why do you think personalistic is important? Why do you think it has to be self-disclosure as opposed to like, oh, here's some interesting facts about life?
What do you mean by, what's the word, self-disclosure?
Yeah, it's about you. You're saying things about yourself that are maybe revealing that nobody, that very few people, only people close to you might know.
Trust.
Yeah, I think trust. is a good one. Like, oh, he trust me. And that's why I think if it escalates too fast, that's a bad sign, because whoa, why is this person, I barely know this person, he's trusting me too much.
Right. Yeah. Because I always heard that, like, oh man, you're revealing yourself too much. You know, you have to, like, you want to be an open book, but at the same time, you want to keep it mystery.
A little bit, but that's why the escalating is important. Start off small. And if they're, and you know, kind of encourage them. When you start off small, also, it's easier to encourage. And by the way, we're going to get to the actual 36 questions that this study uses to get people closer. So, and then we'll see how they escalate. I think the key is you get someone to say, well, we'll see some of the questions. But if someone starts off small, then their brain tells them, oh, I am the type of person who reveals personal things to this almost stranger. And so as their brain gets comfortable with that, then it's possible to escalate. So yes, this is a technique, but I think the other thing too is that you're spending something. You're when you reveal something about yourself, like you just said, Jay, you know, people even say, "Oh, keep things close to the vest." You're spending a little bit of your mystery advantage in order to get this vulnerability advantage, and I think people are afraid to do that. So, you know, that's important.
Yeah, it's funny when you said the what's the word, escalating. That also remind me of what Chuck Palahniuk said the other day. It's like, never start your book with the most important stories.
Right. Yeah, and you know what, I had to think about that, because I know of a lot of writers who do start with their most important stories, and I think often in a book, I mean, I can think of many examples where people do start with their most important stories. So I'm still not entirely sure about that, but perhaps the most meaningful stories, yeah, maybe they, that's different than important. Right. You know, so we'll see. But there's something else I was thinking. Oh, it also reminds me of David Litt, who came on. He was the speech writer for President Obama. And he talked about how in a good speech, you want to build a ladder of meaning. Like first things that have small meaning, but everybody can relate to it, but they have small meaning. And then you get to bigger and bigger meaning, like, you know, the civil rights movement. So he, you know, he broke down a Martin Luther King speech. And, you know, Martin Luther King talks about how he was sick and this happened and this happened. So, okay, you care about someone because they're sick and you want them to be better. But then he escalated it until finally he's talking about, I have a dream. And that's the I have a dream speech. So so anyway, the important thing is, though, they give in this research, they give a list of questions they did on thousands of subjects. And they determined that as people who were relative strangers, they made sure people were kind of like on the same page on some big issues. That's how they qualify people to be part of the study. So these people weren't, it wasn't like one was a evangelical religious person and the other person was an atheist. They like more or less were similar, but they wanted to compare if two people ask these questions compared with two people who didn't ask these questions, who felt closer at the end? And the people who asked these questions felt much, much closer at the end. Mm-hmm. So the idea here is the technique is if you're on like a first date or a second date or whatever, try some form of these questions. And by the way, they mentioned it's important to do them in order because of the escalating aspect and, you know, see what happens. And then one more important thing before we go into the questions, what they measured was if people feel right now more intimate with each other after asking these questions. And obviously if you want to build sustained intimacy and romance and love and marriage, you kind of have to be vulnerable and self-disclosing, you know, on a long-term basis. You have to keep watering the plant for the relationship to continue to grow. There's either growth or death in a relationship. So that's just important to remember. So Robin, how about I will ask you some of these questions and I will also answer them.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to keep quiet because I don't have any partner.
Yes, you're the lonely bystander.
You're the third wheel. You're the third wheel.
There's another set of questions for if it's not a romantic relationship, they call it small talk questions. So if you're building, so I should have used these whenever I've been in a party and I've been feeling like introverted or awkward. These would have been good for me to know. You still want to do the same technique, escalate,
right?
Self-disclosure, but you have to start with small talk. Like, what do you think about the weather sort of thing? But anyway, okay, here's the slips for closeness generating. Slip is a question. Questions for closeness generating. Given the choice of anyone in the world, whom would you want as a dinner guest?
You.
Good answer. Other than me. I would say anyone in history even too.
Anyone in history?
Yeah.
Well, wow.
So this is not multi, like you can choose the answer. So it's like something they have to come up.
Yeah, it's self-disclosure. If it's multiple choice, it's not self-disclosure. It's test disclosure.
That's hard because there's so many people.
Yeah, and by the way, it almost
probably
sounds like
Einstein.
Yeah, Einstein might be interesting. Why?
Just because I think his brain was just so amazing. And so he would be so interesting to talk to.
I wonder if he would be like, or if he was like so interesting because he was constantly thinking in his head, maybe he wouldn't be interesting to talk to. But
I think he was very creative. So I would enjoy a creative conversation like that.
Yeah. Einstein's a good one.
Ideas.
This is self-revealing, but in a small way. Like it shows me, oh, you might be attracted to smart people, for instance. And so now I'm thinking I'm thinking of my answer. And the first one that comes to mind is Jesus, of course, just to see what the hell he was all about. Like, did he really?
He was just a man.
Yeah, but why was he able to inspire, you know, ultimately billions of people?
Yeah.
But that almost seems too cliche, and Einstein's a good one.
It's funny. Like,
We didn't ask you, Jay.
Okay. No, but Jay, who would you pick?
I'm just teasing.
Who would you pick, Jay?
Because this would be bad, but this would be bad. It's almost, I wouldn't say offensive, but I would love to have a dinner with Genghis Khan for some reason.
Oh, Genghis Khan? Because we're all descended from him. No, but you know what? That's like an interesting one because this is a person who, without really, I mean, there was big armies back then, but they didn't have any fancy weapons or anything like that. And he essentially conquered all of Asia. I don't know if he got up to Europe, but he did conquer all of Asia from China to the Middle East.
I'm just curious, like, you live in such a cold country, you have nothing, and why would you have such a big ambitious? Because like back however thousand years ago, I assume there's no internet. You don't know what's out there, you know? Like, how do you know you'll be able to do all this thing? And what gives you the idea to do all this thing? You know what I mean? It's just curious.
Yeah, like, why would he feel the need to basically conquer the world at that time? Like, why not just have a pleasant life with your family and relax?
Because you always talk about, like, you know, like, if someone do something because they got hurt by some sort of, you know, someone or something before. Like, I wonder what he got hurt before. You know, like,
maybe,
you know,
or maybe he didn't like his home life and he figured, maybe. Okay, well, I could rape and pillage all the time. That seems like, for him, that seemed like a better life.
So I mean,
knows?
Like, there's something they must have, he must have, like, you know, like, see, or something that he might have seen or he might have done. They're like, okay, this feels good, or, you know. Because if you think about it, like, why, like you said, why is the need of conquering? And also, what?
And also what his strategies were for conquering. Let's not forget, he was the most successful conqueror in history. I would say, in terms of ranking, there's Genghis Khan, there's Alexander the Great, who went all the way from, let's say, Eastern Europe down to India, and with Persia along the way. There was Charlemagne, not Charlemagne the God, who's been on this podcast a couple of times, but Charlemagne the Emperor, who was born in 754 AD, who basically conquered and unified Europe. It's probably the only time before and since that Europe's been fully unified. Maybe there's Attila the Hun, who was with his, you know, tribes were able to conquer the Roman Emperor, which had lasted for, you know, 800 years about. What other successful conquerors were there? Of, you know, Napoleon took, you know, both. I don't want to say Hitler was a successful conqueror because he really wasn't.
He's not a conqueror. I don't think he's a conqueror. He's more like a dictator.
Yeah, but the one thing about both Napoleon and Hitler messed up strategically, which is interesting that Hitler didn't try to learn from Napoleon's mistakes, is they both tried to invade Russia, and they both basically just lost their shit in Russia.
Yeah, well, I think the only one that we mentioned that successfully conquered Russia is Genghis Khan, because, you know, it's right there.
Right, but Russia wasn't unified at the time.
Yeah, it wasn't unified at the time, yeah.
I mean, Russia almost is the best defender, because their technique is just to withdraw and withdraw and withdraw, and eventually the Russian winter gets everyone.
They have the terrain advantage, right? That's what you call the geographical advantage, because it's so cold out there.
Yeah. You know, it's like I'm going through all the people. First off, having a podcast is almost like, it's like I get to answer this question all the time, because whoever I have on my podcast is someone I've dreamt of having dinner with. Like, you know, you mentioned Chuck Palahniuk earlier. I mean, he's one of my favorite writers, and I get to talk to him for 1-2 hours whenever he comes on the podcast. It's like a dream come true. Or Garry Kasparov. I get to talk to him about chess for a couple hours. Or
it's great there because now you and Chuck, I mean, I don't know how much you guys keep in touch, but like he likes you a lot. Like he sent you a nice note after the podcast.
Yeah, and
even Robert Greene.
Yeah, and Robert Greene is always so interesting and so smart to learn from. So it's like I get to answer. It's like I don't have to answer this question. I get to live it. It's not a dream scenario for me. I've had 900 guests or 1,000 guests on this podcast that were all people I could have answered this question with. All these astronauts, athletes, writers, you know, Richard Branson, you know, again, Garry Kasparov, all these people I would have. So I'm thinking more historical. Robin picked kind of like an extremely smart person, perhaps the smartest person ever. Jay, you picked probably the greatest conqueror ever. So I'm thinking of someone in the middle and maybe this sounds a little corny, but Lao Tzu, the author of the Tao Te Ching. Because on the one hand, a lot of people assume Taoism is a, and that Lao Tzu was a very spiritual person, and Taoism is a spiritual sort of religion. But there's a huge theory that Lao Tzu had nothing to do with religion or spirituality, and that the book, the Tao Te Ching, is completely a political text, and he was trying to advise the Chinese emperor at the time how to be a better emperor. So there is that theory that Lao Tzu and the Tao Te Ching is totally political. So I would be curious to have dinner with him because, A, I think the Tao Te Ching, I've probably read it 500 times. It's useful for anybody to read, but there's a lot of insights and depth to it. But I want to kind of know where it comes from. Nobody really knows much about Lao Tzu. So I'd like to have him on the podcast or have dinner with him. So, okay, I'm going to go to the next question. Robin, would you like to be famous and in what way?
No.
How come?
Because I'm private.
I think a lot of people think fame, though, is, and I think people are wrong about this, but I think people think fame is when everyone loves you, and infamy is when everyone hates you.
Yeah, you get both when you're famous.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like, just pick a random actor, like, I don't know, Matthew McConaughey. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people love him, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who hate him. Or take J.K. Rowling, who, you know, sold like, I don't know, 500 million copies of her books. And right now, because she's famous, a lot of people really hate her because of recent comments.
So there's lots of jealousy. You're not going to live a private life.
Yeah. And also one thing I hate about, I mean, I'm not answering the questions, but I'm just talking about being famous. I hate about once you're being famous, whatever you say would be like, oh, you have the responsibility to say this to, you know, to the public. Well, you're just a regular person.
That's true. And, you know, I am not famous, but of course, once a day, if I'm walking around, someone who listens to the podcast will say hello. And I'm really grateful for that. Please, if you see me anywhere, say hello. I really do love it. And every time I go to an airport, I run into someone who either reads my books or listens to this podcast, and it's very gratifying to me. And I would say initially I thought my answer to this would be no, but I actually would like to be famous. And the reason is I think that's a metric for how many people are enjoying the writing I do or the podcasting I do, like, you know, or a product that I made, for instance, which, you know, is probably a little bit more rare, but I think it's a good way. If you're any form of entertainer, and a podcaster is an entertainer, a writer is an entertainer, even if they think they're a nonfiction writer and they're writing about very serious things, nobody's going to read your shit if you don't entertain, if you're not interesting. So, you know, I've been a comedian, so I've been a performer. I've been a public speaker, so I've been a performer. And again, writing is a form of performance. Certainly podcasting is. So I have to say, just by my actions, even if I said I don't want to be famous, then I do certainly want a huge audience for all of these different things I do. I want to be liked for these things. And maybe that's because at heart I was insecure. When I was a kid, I didn't have many friends. My parents were gone all the time. And maybe I felt like a replacement. You know, I'm getting all therapy now, but maybe I felt a replacement for that lack of love and attention was, the attention of the masses. So I went down this career path.
But, you know, you got to take the good with the bad then.
Yeah. No, it's true.
And you have no control over it.
I have to say, this year has been more bad than good. I mean, people love the podcast and love my writing and everything, but I've certainly, you know, the power of social media has empowered people more than ever to just be hateful and disgusting and despicable. And it's been very disappointing seeing who's really your friend and
that's right. I was going to say, plus you don't really know. It's pretty lonely because you just don't know who's your friend for real. Like, are they using you? Are they, or do they just really like you for who you are? So when you don't have that fame and you, no one knows how much money you have, you're just a normal person, you get true friends because they're not after you for something else. They're just like you for who you are.
And, you know, I think about it, like ever since I started my first business, or even before that, ever since I started managing people, almost all my friends in some way or other I work with. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I don't really have friends the way other people do. It's not like I rarely know my neighbors. I don't do friendly activities. Like I don't go camping or vacationing with people or anything like that, or go to a golf club.
Well, now you're
going to
do that.
Hmm?
We're going to go camping.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see.
I'm introducing you to the real world.
Okay, here's one. This is a good one. The next question is, before making a telephone call, do you ever rehearse what you're going to say?
No.
Jay?
Oh, wait. Do I have to answer this? Yes.
I
have to, because I am a introvert. So like I will have to rehearse and then have to rehearse what you reply and then have to rehearse what's my response.
Oh, no.
I used to do that 100% of the time, but now I don't, unless I'm feeling very awkward for some reason. So sometimes if I don't return a call for a long time, and then you ever get into that pattern where you don't return a call and then you feel bad, so that makes you even less want to return a call. Oh, I'll do it tomorrow. And then the next day, oh, I don't really want to right now. I can't deal with it. I'll do it tomorrow. And then you eventually have to return the call, but it's 2 months later. So I do rehearse those. Like, how am I going to apologize about this? I feel so bad. So I guess whenever I'm feeling awkward, I rehearse.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, I have to rehearse this. But the funny thing is, no matter how much I rehearse, once I got on the call, all the response is going to be different.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's
a weird thing.
That's the way of it.
And then I just have to, I also have to rehearse how happy, how much energy I have to put into it.
And Robin, I could see why you don't rehearse, because I feel like you're used to just talking to so many different types of people on the phone. Like you talk to friends, you talk to family, you call. I think it's a good practice, actually. Like someone said on the podcast the other day that they make sure at the end of the day, after a hard day of work, they call someone they're close to and establish contact and, you know, feel that closeness through a phone call. And I think you're one of those types of people. Mm-hmm. And I'm like the opposite of that.
Yeah. And also Robin's very straightforward.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Right. So if she hasn't called anyone in 2 months.
Yeah.
Like Robin, what would you say? If you hadn't called someone in 2 months and you feel bad about it, how would you respond?
I don't think Robin's gonna do that. I think Robin's just gonna return the call right away.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robin's never like miss a call.
Or if I forget, I'm like, oops, I'm sorry.
I forgot.
Well, yeah, because
I tell him the truth.
Even if I get like just a message from a random person, you're always reminding me, like, did you call that person back yet? And I'm like, I'm never gonna call that person. Like, why would I call that person back?
Yeah, it's scary. What if the person's like,
what are you scared of?
Well, it's repetitions. For me, it's repetitions. So what if the person thinks that I'm dumb? I'm like a watermelon, walking watermelon.
See, that's your thinking, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's, well, I scare myself.
I would say when I was like in the dating world and I would ask someone out on a date, I would rehearse that a little bit before making a phone call. Because those are scary.
Those are really scary. Like, because how many girls will say hi to me?
Particularly if you don't rehearse.
Yeah.
But you know, when
particularly
you rehearse,
if you're just yourself.
I feel like when you rehearse, you can tell when someone's rehearsed it. Like I can.
That's why you get to be a good performer.
I know. I can't tell.
So that's why I just do it on the fly.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period. And I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs. And I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb
has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a three-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
So, okay, next one. When did you last sing to yourself and to someone else?
Okay,
well,
so
I'll
question
answer.
Would be...
I feel like
time I tried to sing?
No, I feel like you... First of all, I'll say my answer, which is... I sing to myself probably every day, and often I'm joking around and I sing to you, and that happens like either every day or every other day. I feel like we do that with each other all the time.
Yeah, that's pretty common.
So let me see. Okay, this is a good one. If you were able to live to the age, and by the way, I'm doing this all in order, so I'm not looking for good ones. We just did, this is number six.
Okay.
If you're able to live to the age of 90, if you're able to live to the age of 90 and retain either the mind or body of a 30-year-old for the last 60 years of your life, which would you want?
Body.
Yeah, I'm going with body there because
I'm planning on
being just as smart at 90 anyway. So
yeah, but if you're so like, if you chose the mind, just think about how tragic that would be. Like all the things that you want to do, but you can't because you're too old.
Yeah, I go for body too because you know I collect dad jokes. So by 90s, I have a million dad jokes that I can tell.
Yeah. No, I just think in general they're assuming the body. They're assuming the mind declines the way the body does. I don't think the mind has to decline, particularly if you have a healthy body. So yeah. I think you're more likely to have a healthy mind if you have a healthy body. So I'll definitely keep the body.
Yeah.
Just the science of this.
Yeah. If you have dementia, just play mahjong.
Yeah. No, but mahjong, you need to know what the other people are discarding. Come on, Jay. Do I have to teach you about every game?
Yeah, but dementia, like in Chinese saying, like if you have dementia, you know, just play mahjong. It will help.
You know what? You're right. So if you want to avoid dementia, it's good to play games or solve puzzles that require some spatial ability, which mahjong has, and also memory, which mahjong very much has, as does chess and poker and card games and so on. So that's why older people play bridge, all sorts of games. Do you have a secret hunch about how you will die, Robin?
Not really.
Yeah,
hopefully
I sort of
in my
like
sleep.
I kind of see that about you. You're like kind of you're kind of strong. Like you don't have any weaknesses. I feel I have a secret hunch that I'll have a heart attack. Not because I have any kind of blood or cholesterol issues or anything, but I just think that I take on so many stresses and challenges for myself, even when activities for fun, like hobbies, are always extremely stressful. Like why would I take, like other people take as a hobby, you know, stamp collecting. Why would I take stand-up comedy as a hobby where you have to like go in front of a bunch of strangers, tell jokes, and they could literally laugh at you and make fun of you. Like, why would I do that as a 40, whenever I started doing that in my late 40s? And
Are you saying stamp collecting is not stressful? Have you watched National Treasure? What if they won the stamp that only came out that one time? They have to go to behind the Statue of Liberty to find the clue to find it.
Maybe. I don't know. But there's certainly a lot of hobbies that are not stressful. Like looking in a telescope every day and mapping the universe. I don't know. Whatever your hobby is. Or just watching football. You might get stressed if your team doesn't win. But it's not the same as... That's like a passive stress. Whereas when you go on stage or if you play a game of, like, let's say your hobby is poker, you could go to have fun and lose thousands of dollars. Or if you go play, if your hobby is chess, you could play a game in a tournament, you could play for 5 hours and you could be winning the whole time and at the end you lose. That's stressful. So I feel like I take on these, or you could be an entrepreneur and on these challenging situations that are heart palpitating stress. And so I have a secret hunch that some stress-related illness is how it's gonna. So I want to get to the other sets so we see the escalation. But also, I'll just stop with this question number 8. But there's 12 questions in this set. Name 3 things you and your partner appear to have in common. So, Robin, what are 3 things you think you and I have in common?
Well, we like to talk about our ideas.
Yes, that's true. We have a lot of fun doing that.
And creating things. That's really fun.
Yeah. We both like creativity.
Mm-hmm. And we both like to watch TV.
I don't know if that's... You know what? Let's be proud of it. Like, watch TV and proud. Like, I feel like our generation was the first generation that has basically been exposed to thousands and thousands of stories because of TV. Like, our language of storytelling is so much greater than prior generations. Like, Robin, think of your grandparents. I bet you they could not tell us, like, they have a very old-fashioned way of telling us stories, how I remember my grandparents. And, like, we are much better at it because we've seen so many plots.
Right. That's true.
What's another thing, though? TV is kind of like, everybody likes watching TV.
We like to go on walks together.
Yeah, and walking's very healthy.
And we like to travel together.
Yeah, yeah. That's very true.
And we also love experimenting together.
Yeah.
Everything.
And I think our values are similar, like our views on,
sure. Yep.
On trust and parenting and relationships. I think our views on money are somewhat similar,
right.
Maybe a little different. I think I'm a little more, oddly, because I've gone broke so many times, I think I'm a little more cautious than you. But
that's cautious in investing part.
I think caution in spending, actually. Because as mentioned in our, Jay, have we even released the How to Be Wrong?
I'm
Wrong podcast, because I talk about buying a house.
No, yeah, yeah.
I would never have bought a house.
Yeah, but you like to fly private, and I think it's too expensive, so I say go commercial. So I think we balance each other.
All right, maybe we balance each other there.
Yeah.
Because
I think private is just over... It's just... I don't know.
I now agree with you on that, but sometimes it's
extra.
Yeah.
As the kids say. It's extra.
Okay, I'm going to move to set two, which is supposedly... more escalating. And is there something that you've dreamed of doing for a long time? Why haven't you done it?
Go to space.
You really dreamed of going to space?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
When you were a kid, did you want to go to space?
Yes.
When I was a kid, I really wanted to go to space, but now I have no interest. But why haven't you done it then?
Because I don't know. I'm not an astronaut.
Did you ever think about being an astronaut?
Yes.
Why didn't you go down that
path? I'm not great at math.
Oh, yeah. That will stop being an astronaut. That's sort of a shame that you have to be good at math to go into space.
Well, but no, it's possible.
It
now
is possible
with Blue
now.
Origin.
Yeah. But it costs a lot of money. By the end of our lives, it'll be possible for anyone to go into space. So I bet you, Robin, at some point, you will go to space.
Because that would be the most amazing thing ever.
Something I've dreamed of doing for a long time. I feel I've done the things I've dreamed of doing. You know what? I mean, I've done this in the past, but for years. So when I started writing in 1989 or 1990, and I wrote four novels and dozens of short stories, but that was then. And I didn't publish any of them because I was building the skill. But now that I've been writing for 30 years, I really want to write a novel, and I think I haven't done it because I think the real reason I haven't done it, now that I'm thinking about it, a lot of it stems from insecurity that I could put so much effort into something for a year or two and then get it published, which takes another year or so, and then people just might not like it or might not read it. The average novel sells like a few hundred copies. And when I write articles or blog posts or whatever, I try to do it in a storytelling fashion, even if it's nonfiction. And I try to be very revealing about myself and my failures and times I've been, you know, had hardship and so on. And I get immediate feedback. So I like things. So when you do stand-up comedy, you get immediate feedback. When you play a game of chess, particularly if you play speed chess, you get immediate feedback. Even being an entrepreneur, I don't enjoy as much because I don't get immediate feedback. In fact, whenever I've started a business, I like to sell it as quickly as possible to get feedback at least as fast as possible. So I think the reason I haven't done lots of things I've dreamt of is I dreamt of getting a PhD. I didn't do that because it takes so long. I err on the side of doing things where I can get immediate feedback, and maybe the learning curve is very steep and I could measure success very quickly of the learning curve.
Interesting.
So, Robin, what do you value most in a friendship?
Loyalty and trust.
When do you know you can't trust somebody?
When they start talking about somebody else to me.
In a good way or a bad way?
Bad way.
But we talk about people sometimes.
That's
we're
different.
A closed loop.
Yeah. But typically you can tell that someone gossips when, you know, they start gossiping about someone to you. And that's a big red flag to me.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I definitely value that. I definitely value trust. Loyalty, it's hard to say like what you mean by that. Like,
well, when I mean loyalty, I mean like, let's say that there's somebody that you don't trust in your world of friendships, and you are hurt by somebody. And another friend sees that they've done that to you, but yet they're still friends with that person.
Yeah. No, you know what? Actually, that's interesting. That's bothered me too with people. Yeah. I would say for me, what I value most in friendship is definitely trust is a big deal. It's gotta be also, you know, I hate to say it, but it's gotta be interesting to me. Like they offer, not interesting, but they offer value in my life. Like they're there when I need them. They show up for me and I show up for them. So it's always mutual. And I think and they're not fair weather. Like when things are bad, they don't abandon you. I've lost lots of friends that way. And I guess also it's not important to me. And it's important, I think, to say what's not important in this. It's not important to me what someone's political beliefs are. Like I have friends whose political beliefs are all over the place. Now, I won't be friends with someone who I think is like racist or anti-Semitic or whatever. Right. And I would never be, I don't like being friends with people who I think in general in their lives are dishonest. Like they cheat on people or right. they're criminals. But I think what their political beliefs are, as long as I can have a conversation with them about it and it doesn't turn into like a shouting match. Like for instance, one of my closest friends is my business partner, Dan. We don't believe politically on a lot of issues, but we're able to discuss them. And we've actually never had like an angry argument in the 22 years we've worked together. So even if we disagree on things.
Right.
And that's important too, so that we can move forward even through our disagreements. So we could like if we have disagreements in business, those are important to resolve. But we're able to resolve them after 22 years of
having
these discussions. I think it's so
silly to like just only have friends that believe the same way you believe in politically. I mean, because it's not about the person. Like you could have, I mean, I don't care what they believe politically. It's just you enjoyed their friendship and their morals, their I think that's the most important. It's just the person. So I think it's really silly to just only be around people that believe the way you believe politically.
Let's even take an extreme. Let's say you're in an old age home and you're 90 years old. So it's not like you might not even live for the next election or climate change is, you could care about it, but it's not going to affect you because you're going to die soon. And there's a friend in the room next to you or a person in the room next to you who is fun to play games with. You talk about your memories. You've had similar experiences. Mm-hmm. But let's say you really believe in climate change and this person really doesn't believe in climate change. It's not like you're going to say, oh, I can't be friends with that person.
Right.
Like,
it's
who are you going to be friends with? Like, you've got to...
You just don't talk about it and you just, I don't know, you just move on.
Or if you talk about it, you could joke around like, oh, you probably, I don't know, want to burn the world down or whatever. Anyway, but... I think that's important to me as well. And Jay, what do you value in a friendship?
I think I'm similar with James. Like, you know, you show up for me and I show up to you. It's the trust and it's mainly the trust, actually. Like Robin said too. So like it's a bit of both of you. And I really do appreciate like people that talk sound to other people. I lost a friendship. Like, yeah, he helped me before, but like every time he will like talk down to me, he treat me like, you know, I'm second class person, you know, like he's like the big man in the house and I'm the small man in the house. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So this is set two. We had gone through set one, but the last one or two questions were from set two, which is escalating intimacy. And notice, like, as opposed to like, oh, who would you want as a dinner guest? Who would you like to have as a dinner guest? This is more like, what do you value in a friendship? You know, is there something you've dreamed of doing? This is more really about a deeper layer of you that you're asking about. And so I'm going to skip to set three. There's like 12 questions in set two. Here's a question. How do you feel about your relationship with your mother? That was in set two.
Any of those?
No, I'm just saying them. What roles do love and affection play in your life? What is your most terrible memory? Blah, blah, blah. But okay, set three, this is supposed to be the highest, maybe not the most escalating it could be, but this is the next level of escalation. This is what this set was the final set in their experiment that they did. Make three true we statements. For instance, we are both in this room feeling. So you can see how now it's going from something really personal and deeper about you to now the escalation is now it's about us. We're like in this together now. So make three true we statements.
Okay, so we are both in this room feeling excited about our podcast.
Yeah, and I would say like on our first date, I think we were both in that restaurant feeling we wanted to talk more about each other than about the original topic, which was investments.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go to another question. We don't have to say three. You can see how these are escalating. Tell your partner, like let's say it's a date, tell your partner something that you like about them already. So like on that first date, I liked how pretty you were. Mm-hmm. I liked your values on parenting. Uh-huh. And I liked you had been through some really tough experiences and really had gotten through them in amazing ways. And I really admired you for that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the same, made that first night. I really enjoyed the fact that you were a good listener, that you were very smart, very intelligent and very kind and real.
Yeah. Okay, here's another one. This is a funny one given what's going on with Dave Chappelle, but what, if anything, is too serious to be joked about? I don't want to answer that one right now. But here's an interesting one. When did you last cry in front of another person?
Me?
Yeah.
About 4 days ago in front of my son.
Really? What did you cry about?
Oh, he was just telling me some things that he felt when he repatriated last year, and it made me sad that he actually felt that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is very revealing. It shows, you know, what kind of mother you are. It shows you, you know, how you have empathy with people and so on. And I think probably the last time I cried in front of another person was in front of you. I'm probably a crybaby in front of you.
No.
I remember when it was like overwhelming.
I cry in front of you too.
Yeah, you cry in front of me. I remember when it was just overwhelming, like everything that was going on with this stupid article, which I keep talking about, but I got to move past it. But this is the last time I think I cried really in front of you. It was like I couldn't even believe so many people were like Jerry Seinfeld, one of my one-time heroes, was writing an article just insulting me, not even addressing the issues.
And he doesn't even know you.
Yeah, and people I did know who I had helped were trashing me on Twitter and whatever. And
but those aren't your friends. You thought they were. That's the sad part.
That was the sad part, actually, to me. And the reality is I've had so many instances like that, like, really, you are now trashing me, like it was a little overwhelming because I've had it happen before, but that was a little overwhelming. And yeah,
it's so good that you know that now. It's good that you know who your really friends are, because
basically just the two of you people on this call.
no that's not true.
I've actually met a lot of wonderful people through this podcast.
Yeah, you
too
do have friends. Yeah, true friends.
Yeah, I have
You don't need so many true friends. I mean, you just need a few friends. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Just your inner circle.
Here's some other sample questions. We don't have to answer them. share with your partner an embarrassing moment in your life. You know, that's very revealing.
I've got a lot of those.
If you were to become a close friend, please share what would be important for him or her to know. Complete this sentence. I wish I had someone with whom I could share X. Of all the people in your family, whose death would you find most disturbing? Why? Obviously, any of our kids would be. Share a personal problem and ask ask for advice on how he or she might handle it. So again, these are like very, not only revealing, but you're including the other person. So that's the escalation. So the first one is, you know, of the who would you want to have dinner with sort of variety. The second set is, you know, telling things about yourself that, you know, like what's your dreams and stuff like that. The third thing is either saying something embarrassing that you wouldn't normally say about yourself, like when was the last time you cried, or they're about us, like tell me how you feel about me. So that's like the next level of escalation. And again, the key always is to have nonstop, you know, this is, so if you want to, if you're on a date or you're in a intimate situation or with a potential stranger or a potential, you know, romantic partner, escalating intimacy like this is very powerful. And this scientific study, and there's been other studies like this, they show that it works. And again, the paper is The Experimental Generation of Interpersonal Closeness. And they kind of give all these questions there, which you don't have to use these questions, but they kind of give a sense of the kind of escalation. Now, what if it's just small talk at a party, not with somebody you're going to be a romantic relationship with, but maybe it's a boss or a coworker or someone you're selling or a neighbor. So there's a different set of questions for that. And I'll just read quickly some of the questions. We don't have to answer them right now. Here's in the first part, the beginning of small talk. When was the last time you walked for more than an hour? Describe where you went and what you saw. What was the best gift you ever received? Do you read a newspaper often, and which one do you prefer? What is a good number of people to have in a student household? If you could invent a new flavor of ice cream, what would it be? So I always feel like I don't know how I would bring those questions up. Like, how would you bring up the ice cream one? What's a new flavor? If you could invent a new flavor of ice cream, what would it be?
I just say that.
How about you guys?
What's your favorite ice cream flavor? And then say, well, if you were to make one up, what would you make up?
What would you make up?
Me?
Yeah.
I feel like all the ice cream. Oh, you know what's really good? Skittle ice cream.
What?
Skittle.
You know Skittles?
Skittle ice cream.
I've never had a Skittle.
That would be good.
Yeah, Skittle ice cream. Every bite, every lick
would be like
on the
tangy.
Ice cream would be tangy and different flavor.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I would want waffle ice cream, like an ice cream that tastes like the flavor of waffles. Or you know what? How about plantain vanilla ice cream?
Plantain. That sounds greasy.
Well, that's.
Is it
let's say you could have that without. Let's say you could have the flavor without the grease, but maybe the flavor includes the grease.
I would have a bitter honey. Bitter honey ice cream.
What's that?
Bitter honey.
Bitter honey. I like that candy.
What's bitter?
Bitter honey. It's like it's an old fashioned candy that you know how that candy I was eating by the side of the bed and all those packages.
Oh, what? How
all
do you spell
the wrappers it? Were like on the floor and everything.
How do you spell it?
B-I-T-T and then O, I think. And then honey. So good. Or let's like see. Sugar daddy.
Bit honey.
Oh, honey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to Google today. It's a bit, bit-o-honey.
Yep.
Let me see.
Or remember Sugar Daddy and Sugar Babies?
I never had any of these. So Bitter
Maybe
Honey.
They shouldn't have that name anymore. That would probably be canceled.
They'd probably get canceled right away.
Sugar Daddy.
It's funny. Bitter Honey was started in 1924 and by the Shooter Johnson Company in Chicago.
I wish we could buy
a new kind
that.
Of candy bar consisting of six pieces wrapped in wax paper and then packaged in a cover wrapper. And the candy consists of almond bits embedded in a honey-flavored taffy, which makes for long-chewing candy. Ew, I don't like that.
I love it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm chewing forever and stuff like that. Then it was merged into the Ward Candy Company of New York City in 1969, which they made O. Henry, Raisinets, and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And it was, and then they made a chocolate flavored version called Bitto Chocolate.
Ooh,
and then they were acquired by Terce & Company in 1981. And then they, Terce & Company sold Bitto Honey to Nestle in 1984. And in 2013, Nestle sold Bitto Honey to Pearson's Candy Company. And then in 2020, a few months ago, Spengler Candy Company bought it. So it's funny how all the different mergers and stuff that the lifespan of a brand goes through. So, but anyway, so that's in the first level of small talk. And other ones are, do you like to get up early or stay up late? Blah, blah, blah. So that was in the second one. Another first one is, what's the best restaurant you've been in? Describe the last pet you owned. What's your favorite holiday? Blah, blah, blah. Set two, where it escalates, describe the last time you went to the zoo. Or do you like to get up early or stay up late? Or what did you do this summer? So it's a little bit more, it requires more storytelling in set two. Because like, oh, when's the last time you went to the zoo? Why'd you go? Who'd you go with? Like it leads to other questions as opposed to like, name a flavor of candy you would invent. And then set three is, what was your high school like? Describe your mother's best friend. How often do you get your hair cut? So it's a lot more personal. Do you think left-handed people are more creative than right-handed people? And then I guess that again leads to stories. Like if my brother is left-handed and he does this. And so it leads to more stories. Do you subscribe to any magazines? Which at first sounds kind of very small talkish, but then you realize, oh, if this person subscribes to war magazines and gun magazines, that there's stories behind this.
Yeah,
where it's very revealing. what foreign country would you most like to visit? Actually, let me ask both of you, because you both have traveled internationally, and Jay grew up internationally, and Robin, you spent. Uh-huh. Like 15 years traveling, living abroad. Mm-hmm. What country now that you've never been to would both of you like to visit?
I think Robin should go first. Robin has more stories to tell because she's been to more country than me.
Mm-hmm. I'd say maybe Argentina, somewhere in South America.
Puke.
You know, actually, really where I would like to go is the South Pole.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, mm-hmm. Whoa. Is South Pole a country?
Well, it's sort
yeah,
of a
yeah,
region.
Yeah, no, South Pole. Yeah, it's a continent.
And I would like to go on a, an icebreaker and go do exploration stuff.
That's so brave. I just want to go to Japan and eat all the sushi.
I would like to go to that restaurant.
That's a great place.
I would like to go to that restaurant featured in the documentary Hero Dreams of Sushi. That looks like a good restaurant.
Yeah.
James, you would love Japan too.
Yeah, Japan is great. Robin is like, I want to be an explorer. Jay is like, I just want to eat.
Yeah. Robin either wants to go to outer space or 10,000 feet underwater.
Listen, I've been all over the land of this world, and I've been, I've been diving and everywhere, so underwater. So now I want to explore space.
Is there such a thing as volcano diving? Like, can you go wear like a suit and go in the?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, you can get close to it.
Yeah, you
but
can.
I don't think you can. Yeah, you can get in. Even though when you get closer, you have to be very cautious and
you can go over a helicopter and you can go you can go close, which would be fun too.
Yeah.
The point of all this, again, is this is based on some research in the experimental generation of interpersonal closeness done by a bunch of professors. They took thousands of subjects and had them either ask these questions or not. And their point is that to establish quick intimacy, you need to, and I'll just read their exact statement again. To establish quick intimacy, you need to create sustained, escalating, reciprocal, personalistic self-disclosure. And they come up with a set of questions, whether you're in a romantic situation or a non-romantic situation, they come up with a set of questions that are to be done in order because they involve the escalating, and ultimately you're revealing like very deep things about yourself, like, oh, what are you most scared to reveal to somebody? That might be a potential top escalation, and the beginning escalation might be, oh, why do you like this restaurant, or you know, that sort of thing. So if you want the full list of questions, I'll write it down. Maybe I'll put it on my LinkedIn newsletter, which you could find by finding me on LinkedIn at James Altucher.
Or your new notepad.
Oh, yeah. Or we haven't launched it yet, but we're about to launch a project called Notepad, where you get to keep track of your idea lists. So more on that in the future. Meanwhile, stay tuned for another upcoming episode where Robin and I will find out our intimacy quotient. We will take the IQ test, and I will show you guys what the intimacy quotient test is like, so you could determine in your relationships how intimate you guys are.
When we were recording the podcast, you would see Jay sitting in the corner just crying.
Yeah, Jay's gonna be sad. If there's any lonely young women out there who want a good person in their lives, Jay has gone from homeless beggar. I just saw one. I mean, he would just grunt. He like grew up with the wolves. And I took him and I said, you could be an audio engineer, young man. And he went from audio engineer to super producer of podcasts. And it's really been amazing. So
thank you. I traded my sense of smell to the sense of hearing.
I'm not sure what that means, but yeah. And so ladies out there, write in or tweet that you love the podcast, and Jay always checks the Twitter.
Yes. And thank you.
And once again, if you like what you heard here, please follow this podcast so you don't miss one. Robin, thanks for coming on. Tell me if you like Robin, because we all want validation of our choices. And see you guys next time. Thank you, guys.
Okay, thanks. Right,
thank
bye.
You.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.